All right. Staff of AO just finished watching Hotel Rwanda. From the best we can tell, joint production of United Kingdom.
Italy,
right, and South Africa, where it was, I think, most of the location.
Some of it was filmed.
Filmed there. You're right. I think the acting was pretty good.
I don't think they're B-class actors.
There's no, like no. Just I'd say I call it an independent.
Right.
There's only two big actors, though, right?
Two big actors from our perspective, but like what we saw in some of the extras, the guy who played, I forget, what would you call him? Like the
right-hand man.
The right-hand man for the manager. Yeah. Right? What would he be? Is there any, trying to think, is there
for
any,
who?
Any name of the hotel?
It was like his personal. It was Don Cheadle's personal assistant,
and that he's apparently a big star in South Africa.
And so is the general, the guy who played the general for the Hutu army.
Okay, and then
he was like, he was described as like the Brad Pitt of Africa, I guess you'd say.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And then the wife of the main character.
She's a big British actor. Yeah.
So yeah, we got a big.
Well, then there was what was the one reporter?
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah,
he's a Hollywood actor.
I'm not a movie expert, but one thing I did notice, and if you didn't know this was a true story, it would strike you as kind of odd, is I think the flow of the story isn't always logical. I mean, it doesn't. If you were putting together a movie, you wouldn't have done it that way. That's just the feeling I got. And then when you get to the end and they have the text and they say that. And you realize how true it was.
Well, like Chris mentioned in the special features, that the guy, the actual character that Paul was actually there watching the movie being filmed.
The director, when he heard Paul's story, went to Paul and said, "I want to tell your story. Will you help me?" That's the one that I think, one thing that really impressed me. I like movies that are not only well done, but it's tough to do. It's tough to do a well-done, true story.
It sort of reminded me of Schindler's List. The same way the guy started out by, in his life, he's using his money to get his own way to advance himself until he gets into a crisis situation and he has to decide, where am I going to put my money? Am I going to put it where I want to go or where it's needed most?
And that was one of the things that I thought, really being interested in it, writing the article that I wrote on it, that I was going to build it up so much that it would fall short of what, my expectations. And I don't think it did.
Yeah, out of all of us, you're the one who was looking forward to this the most. So, out of all of us, what did you think of the movie? You liked it?
I thought it was tremendous. I mean, although in the beginning I had seen a majority of those scenes in either in trailer form or on the website, and But once it got halfway through, man, I was back into it. Like, I was sitting on the edge of my seat. I mean, it just really reeled me in. I thought that they used music very well. I thought that was done well. And then to realize that it was all packaged so well, and it was true. It was all true. When he went to get the supplies and turned down that foggy road, I had seen a frame of that scene on the trailer, so I knew what kind of was coming, but that it was powerful. I thought it was a powerful film.
His neighbor gets taken away in the middle of the night, and he tells his wife, "I have to protect you. Mm-hmm. I can't use my influence to protect other people.
I must be
protecting my family." But then you see, as he realizes how he has to help those other people, how he has to do something for them. So I think that puts, I think, the movie in a nutshell. A man who was so concerned about, I'm going to build this influence so I can protect my family, but then he saw how many other people needed his help, and he could not turn them away.
Basically, you had two tribal groups that they talk about, Hutus and Tutsis, and the movie is based off of Paul Rusesabagina, who is a Hutu, and his wife is a Tutsi. So that is a major part of the film. As far as my understanding goes, there were two tribes with those names, those original names, and that made up the country of Rwanda. But basically, they had come together, and the races and the tribes had meshed pretty much. And there wasn't, much like we have similar in America, we have different nationalities and races and different groups and things like that. Basically, they had melted together. And when the Belgians came in to colonize, they had, as far as my understanding goes, the European two-class ruling system that Europe had. You had a ruling class who was the upper class, and then you had the low class, much like kings and regular people. It's interesting, though, how they separated that, and they hit on it in the movie very on the very beginning, the difference between the Tutsis and the Hutus. Basically, the Belgians, they just picked them out. And basically, the only way they had to tell which one was which is they figured, hey, well, they noticed the difference. Some people had lighter skin, some people had darker skin. Some people had thinner noses, some people had, you know, bigger noses. And so they split them up that way. And they put the minority Tutsis in power. They were the ruling class. And when the Belgians left, they left like a power vacuum. And obviously, since the Hutus were the majority, they took control. In that time that the Tutsis were in control underneath the Belgian rule, they abused a lot of that power. And they did some things that were not good. And they touch on those in the film a little bit. And so part of the hatred comes from past wrongs that were done. As far as the genocide itself, the beginning of the movie brings out one of the very key to the whole genocide was...
It was the power radio.
It was the radio.
Mm.
The radio station. And in fact, many of the people who ran that radio station were later tried for war crimes. The music they played was all anti-Tutsi music. Remember they were driving in the van,
okay,
and
yeah.
He's saying they're, you know, they call them cockroaches, they call them all these sort of names, and we need to expel, we need to get rid of them. Kind of like hate radio, basically.
Right.
And they programmed the people, basically, in what to think, and then all they needed was a spark to let it go. And I should touch on that real quick. The spark that started it all was the assassination of the president, who was a Hutu. He wasn't a Tutsi. He was
right.
A Hutu, but he was more of a moderate. And he signed the peace accord that the UN, you know, praises to the hilt. And then his plane was shot out of the sky.
Now,
to this day, they don't know who that was.
Well, still, they don't know who actually killed him.
But I think everybody knows that it was the Hutu extremists.
So it's sort of accepted even today, looking back at it, that it wasn't the Tutsi rebels. That they, if you look at it, they actually wanted the peace as much as the president did.
Yeah.
Because what it was showing that the extremists were saying, was that the rebels sort of lured the president in to kill him. But looking at it historically, they never really
had
that
motivation. It didn't make any sense. They had, you know, just gotten a peace together. And the people who were, the only people who had something to lose by the peace were the people who were preaching the hate. They had something to lose because
right.
All of a sudden, everything's gone.
So basically, we have from this movie, we see from the death of the president a mass killing of how many people?
Of about between 800,000 and a million, somewhere in there.
Were killed in three
were
months.
Were killed between, I think it was between April and July, so that would be 3 or 4 months.
Should we as the United States, should we have intervened here?
We did intervene. That's the issue. We did intervene, and it was Madeleine Albright and the Clinton administration who, after those troops died, and it was mentioned in
the
film.
UN troops died.
UN. They're Belgian UN forces. There were 10 of them, and they were very specifically targeted. After that happened, it was Madeleine Albright and the British who led, as far as the movie said, I'm not sure about the British involvement, who went to the UN, and they wanted a complete pullout,
So their response to the UN gone was get rid of everybody who's not a Rwandan, get them out of there.
Let them fight it out. Because you have to put yourself in the historical context, because this was after Somalia. So they're not that we come down too hard on them, but at the same time, it was a huge, huge mistake.
Well, yeah, and that's my question. Should America get involved in, I mean, we say it's horrendous. We say this is horrible what they're doing. Should we get involved in it?
Well, see, I don't see any middle ground personally, and this is part of the problem I've been having with Iraq, is it's not that I'm against going in and helping people out, because I'm not. But at the same time, where do you stop? And I know a lot of people have said this is a reason why we shouldn't go in and help the people of Iraq, and of course there's those that say that nothing, you know, there was no genocide in Iraq at all.
Right.
And
sure there was.
You know, I'm
not
sure you
true.
Could probably find someone who said nothing happened in Rwanda either.
Probably.
I could probably tell you the website, too. But at the same time, you know, what would people say if you know, they'll watch this movie and they'll say, well, you know, America should have done something. Right. Somebody's going to say that.
Well, exactly.
And then the question is, if we would have.
Then what would have they said?
What would have happened is exactly what happened when we tried to go into Iraq. And it would be all our fault. Every time we lost a soldier or every time someone else died, it's all our fault. If we would just leave them go, everything would be fine. And the point is, you know.
Which was the mindset after Somalia.
Right.
That's why exactly. That was the pullout.
Right. And I think it's a sign of weakness when you pull out, period. I mean, if you're going to go in there to do something like save people from getting killed, if you think that's your responsibility, now maybe your worldview doesn't include that. And, you know, I'm not so sure that we should, you know, worry about little details if one person gets killed unjustly or two people get killed unjustly. It's just not feasible to stop that. But
from
if we're talking about mass genocide,
yeah, right.
Do we have a responsibility as a country to protect those people? And if we do, we should have been in there. We should have sent, you know, half our army there to basically stop everyone from doing what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And any other situation, too. Somalia, whatever.
I think also the other side of the coin needs to be addressed, which I think was brought out very well in the movie. Especially with the scene between the assistant who was in charge of the hotel and the general,
right.
The UN general, where the general comes right out and says the reason why they're backing out is because you're African.
To them, you're meaningless. You're,
exactly.
You and don't mean anything because you're on the other side of the world. You're just an African.
Well, I think you could take it a step further because the way the way the lines were written, I don't know if they wrote them like this or if this is actually what was said, but he came right out and said, not only are the Americans and the British and the French against you, it is the Western world that is saying, okay, these guys aren't worth risking our troops for, yet we went into Somalia, and yet we went into Yugoslavia and Bosnia and Herzegovina and were spent many troops in there. Men died there. And when you look at it, they have a valid point.
That's for some reason the Western world devalues the whole continent of Africa.
Was it because they were African? Was it really at base?
That's true.
A race judgment when they wouldn't come right out and say, okay, we're doing this because these people are African. But was that the real motive?
Well, I think we need to be careful not classify it as a black-white thing.
No.
But rather classify it as a halfway around the world, poor, dirt poor, African type thing.
Although, a third world country versus same.
And really,
yeah, I didn't
really
see South Africa doing anything though. I mean,
well, that was the,
it made
that
a
was
movie
another
about
part
it,
of the
but
point.
They didn't.
I mean, look what South Africa's doing in response to Zimbabwe. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
The presidents are meeting together and
wrong.
Having, you know, tea and liquor together because, you know, and the South African president goes there and praises Mugabe for being, you know, this great person. And he's so clueless.
And everybody knows.
Everybody knows. He knows. The both countries know. And I just think a lot of times there's, I don't know.
See, that's
something, there's something about Africa that.
It's the risk opportunity. It's the opportunity cost. Is it worth the UN, and from our perspective, the U.S., getting involved? What are we going to get out of intervening in Rwanda?
Well, I understand that. I understand
Here's
that. I understand the risk cost benefit, like Iraq.
Right.
We could say, and I know people would argue with me, but we could say it was a risk to the security of the United States. Therefore, we could go in. We didn't go in. We didn't lay a case and say Saddam is hurting his people. He's oppressing his people. That's not the case that we said. We said he is, and it's a good thing if we release them from
right,
that.
Right.
But the reason we're going is because he's a threat to the United States. Well, my question is let's, you know, cost, benefit, whether it's, let's just take a look at right, wrong. Is it right? Should
the
United States, because look at this, you watch this movie and you say, man, why didn't we do anything?
Absolutely.
But if we would have done something, people would say, why is America continuing to force its beliefs on the rest of the world? And my question is, do we have that right, or do we even have that responsibility, or should they be allowed and let and be held responsible to do it for themselves?
You have to go back to, is it our moral responsibility to intervene when there's life involved?
And at a pure conservative view, the answer would be absolutely no. But we have a little bit something more than that. we have we have a Christian conservative worldview in the fact that every life is important. And every life has value to it.
And how can we as a nation turn our back on hearing that?
I thought
thousands of people are being killed a day.
This is almost a million people. I mean, you just cannot turn your back on almost a million people. And I think I thought a lot about this. Do we go in? Do we not go in? And here's the thing. People say, oh, you conservatives, berate the UN all the time. And if there's one thing this film shows is the absolute inept farce that the UN is and was at the time. For them to strand this poor general with 300 troops for the entire country, many of whom were not armed.
And they couldn't shoot.
And they couldn't shoot. That is a complete farce. And so you say you conservatives are against the UN. I'm not. And here's what I think. We had no interest in Rwanda. As the United States, we have no interest in Rwanda. I believe there is a place for an organization like the UN to deal with things like this, where no country had an interest in Rwanda.
Right.
Except for the Rwandans
themselves.
But still, there's human lives being lost, and something needs to be done. I'm saying that the UN, obviously can't do that now, but I think there is a need for that organization, so we're not taking American troops and placing them all over the place, and then we open ourselves up.
Yeah, but where do UN troops come from?
They come from essentially American other nations. And then
Canadians and Belgians.
Well, no, understood. They come from other ones.
Yeah, but they're usually in the hundreds.
Yeah, that.
And that doesn't
majority,
do anything.
Well, it does do one thing.
But I'm not saying the UN is set up correctly. I'm saying it's set up right now, wrongly. I told Tim when we were out getting pizza. I mean, we have countries such as Zimbabwe being on the human rights, in charge of human rights at the UN. That is wrong. There's something wrong with that. And I think progress right now would be having a guy like John Bolton who will stand up and say, you know what? You guys are flat out dead wrong. Something
needs to
change.
Who should be in charge
of the UN? Well, that's where I come from. I say, okay, so we have a coalition of nations. Where does it get its authority from, and who tells it what it can do? I mean, I understand what you're saying.
That's tough.
It's hard to say America should come out and say, we are the world power, and what you're doing is wrong, so stop it.
I don't think we can do that. That's impossible.
But at the same time, you want that because you want your ideal worldview to be propagated to everyone else. Because
you look at that's what the UN is. But
the UN's never going to enforce that. It's only going to detract from that. That's what proponents will tell you.
Unless it was totally reconfigured, unless it wasn't the UN.
Unless what?
But
unless it was configured to mirror our constitution and our balance.
And here's
of power.
The thing: if the UN had just been allowed to run its course, I think a lot less of life would have been lost.
Because
we were the influence who caused all the troops to be pulled out in the first place.
I think we're getting away from the issue. We're trying to decide whether it's right or wrong. And I think, Chris, you have a very good point. As a Christian conservative, we have an obligation to intervene where lives are being lost. And I think you're right. But if we're going to take that stand, that means anywhere where lives are being lost without a good reason, we need to get involved. Meaning Zimbabwe, Sudan, North Korea. I mean, you could go on and on.
I thought about that and often just wrestled with that fact. And, I'm not saying I have all the answers, and I don't. But.
Well, why, as we as Christians, why do we get so concerned about the lives being lost? Why aren't we as concerned about the spiritual lives being lost? We're more concerned about the political freedom of these people as opposed to their spiritual freedom.
We're
concerned about our military going in and freeing them from people that are killing them, but we're not concerned about having our own missionaries. We're not concerned about us going in.
And then here's the kicker: to protect ethnic Tutsis from slaughter by extremist Hutus. I just want to focus on what this further division of people, all right, on like who's right and who's wrong, and maybe it's just me, but what do they mean by ethnic Tutsis?
Yeah,
they're the minority. That they gotta be the. They gotta give it a special term to protect them.
Since they're ethnic.
Hutus are not ethnic.
It's not, maybe this is just another word for minority.
Maybe they got.
Okay,
food.
Well, you know, or is it the contrast between ethnic and extremist?
But that, so, that's not a contrast, though.
No, no. Unless ethnic means, yeah, like, people who aren't extreme.
No, but it doesn't.
No, it
I
doesn't.
I can only guess that ethnic means it's another way to say minority. Right? Because whenever we in the United States talk about ethnicity,
it's minority,
no one's talking about my ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
They're always talking about how I have to respect someone else's ethnicity. And this goes back, we'll rehash this for a second. This goes back to Chris's article about how when we magnify the differences between us, we create the same problems that the Belgians did in Rwanda.
We create the hatred between the two. I mean, the Belgians came in and saw Rwanda as a society that was completely, I guess we could use the word assimilated together. And they thought that they needed to create diversity so that you could have a ruling class and a working class instead of, you know, people having an equal ground, equal footing. And the true diversity is not found in magnifying our differences. It's found in minimizing them and saying, hey, let's not focus on how we're different. And why don't we focus on how we're alike? You know, you got a family. I've got a family. We want the best for our kids. We have these similar goals.
I think reaching a common ground, the problem where people argue with that is reaching a common ground without a compromise. You're going to have to compromise to reach the common ground.
But what we're talking about here is not necessarily a compromise in what I believe, what you believe. It's, hey, you're Italian. I'm Irish. Do we have to fight? This is New York City 100 years ago. Do we have to fight? Or can't we both just say, hey, let's open up a restaurant? You know, let's not say you talk one way, I talk the other. That's why I hate you.
I don't think our country's ever been more divided. It maybe is not as clear, I should say.
Well,
but
people would argue the Civil War was divided, but I think you mean more divided as segmented, shattered. Civil War, there were two sides. And it was basically fighting about two or three different things.
That's different.
Yeah, but
it really was
today, we just have all these segments, pockets of different people that are totally different and don't even want to try to become American.
I think the reason we're divided today is because there's been a push to get away from nationalism.
And to celebrate all the differences.
And because, I don't know if it's because they're afraid they're going to turn into Nazis or what, but just because Nazis are characterized by extreme nationalism, I would argue with that. I would say it's extreme racism.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
and they'll say fascism was nationalism.
Of, yeah.
But even still, I don't agree with that because we might have looked at other people as, you know, as being inferior to us, other nations. But I think it's always been other nations. I think it's always
been
other ways of life.
Structure of government, not
inferior
philosophies.
People. Exactly.
Hey, we got a really cool government. Why don't you come
system.
Become
come
successful in a government system? Yeah, I like to say we have a real cool government. But we have a real cool system that's been it's called freedom. And it works.
I think you were right when you said there's no time since the up to the present time that we've been segmented, divided as a nation.
In this way, with the example
of the Civil War, there was a good reason.
Well, and I said there were two different sides. We're talking, it's like shattered.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying today the segmentation and the division of our country is not one guy is doing something wrong, the other guy is doing something right. It's somebody's different than me. And I think where the problem lies is we don't have a really good cause for being divided. There is no good reason why we should be segmented like we are.
I think the key is found in the saying, look, looking at another person saying, look, we're different. And why don't we have a day when we celebrate our differences? I say, why don't we have a day when we celebrate our similarities? And this is a little bit trivial, but you know, it's like, hey, you like to eat, I like to eat. Let's get together and have a picnic. You know, across the neighborhood. I'm just talking community-wise. And instead of saying, well, you have your foods and I have my foods and we'll just, you have a special thing with your foods where you guys go to get together and then we'll have a special thing with our foods, we'll get together. I'm not saying you obliterate those things, but I'm saying, okay, let's come together and share how we're different, but also share how we're the same and not focus all the time on, okay, here's how we're different and you know, you can't celebrate your culture because you're being insensitive to another culture. But when we do what the Belgians did and say, hey, we need to celebrate how we're different. They saw some differences that they needed to celebrate instead of saying, hey, these people have assimilated, they've come together, they have a country that seems to, you know, work out, you know, pretty much okay. Why do we need to mess with it? Why don't we just treat them equally and on the same grounds?
I'd say pretty good story. It was about a great thing that one man did, how he cared about the impact he could have on so many lives, I think, is the focus of the movie. This has been the Hotel Rwanda podcast with the AO writers, Bobby, Aaron, Chris, me, standard writers, Jesse, editor of Fries With That. Hope you've enjoyed it, and maybe you get a chance to enjoy the movie.